nine lodges in Norfolk, the Scottish Rite bodies, and the East had a couple of Eastern Star chapters in it. We had De Molay in the building, but they came together in the 50s to build a building all inclusive in Norfolk so that we could have a facility where everybody was in. The building was finished in the early 60s, like 60, 61. Pretty much all of Norfolk's, anything to do with masonry in Norfolk was in that building. They bought the land in 1948, or there's still some question on whether or not it was donated or sold to us, but they acquired the land in 1948. And that's when they, I guess, got together and said, hey, let's build this and let's make this happen. The building since then has been maintained by the owner members of the building. So basically, charter members, lodges who are charter members have been maintaining the building for quite some time. We're down now to seven lodges in the building. The Commandery's in the building and the Royal Arches in the building. And the Eastern Star is currently in the building, but they've kind of dwindled down, so they're looking for a new place to meet. They've recently found some place that they're going to move to at the end of the year. That's pretty much the history of the building. It is a beautiful building, and we're trying to keep it. As you probably know, a lot of these beautiful Masonic temples have deteriorated to the point where their people have left them completely, and we can, with the current strategies that we have for taking care of the building between Tully Carr and myself, and quite a few other members of the board, we feel like that we can maintain and keep this building forever now, but we're still in the process of trying to get everybody on the same page in the building.
It looks like we lost Tully, but that's all right. We'll keep going with yourself for now.
All right. I don't know. Obviously, one of the big things about keeping a building of this size is cost. The cost of the building to maintain it and keep it running is substantial. In 2020. We had 1,300 members, dues-paying members in the building. So 1,300 people are what's taking care of the building right now financially, plus whatever we can get from rentals. And like Tully said earlier, our biggest fundraiser is the haunted house. And we're kind of hoping that by the time October comes along, which is, it may not happen, but by the time October comes along, we're hoping the virus has calmed down enough to where we could actually have it this year. We're fine financially this year, even if we didn't have it, but the fact that the Scottish Rite organization's leaving our building next year, we're gonna really have to promote the haunted house to help pay for this stuff. As Tully said, also we cover the members of the building cover pretty much all of the the things that we need. And several years ago, I put together a PowerPoint presentation identifying to the members and the temple board. It's what do you need and what do you want? And for years, the temple has been paying for a lot of the things that no other lodges have in their we had at one time a lawn service, janitorial service. We still have a building superintendent that actually lives in the building. We had a doorman we were paying to keep there. So there was a lot of things that that the Temple Corporation was paying for that should have went away a long time ago. But so we've cut the budget quite a bit. Tully was the president last year or 2 years ago, and this is my second term as the president. And the depending on the vote of the board of directors in January, Tully will probably go back in as president. Our bylaws state that we can only be president 2 years in a row. But I think one of our biggest problems that we've had over the years is continuity of government. The president changes so often that there was no long-term strategy to what we could do, what we needed to do. And because of Tully and the board and myself, we have committed to stay in and manage this year after year to keep this ball that we've got rolling now in the right direction, keep it moving forward. And we've got some strategies that we are trying to, we started an off at Cornerstone Foundation that's now, like Tully said, tax deductible, so you can deduct your taxes from it. And if there's people out there that want to donate to that, they can. So we're working to save the building. We don't want to see this building turn into a real dilapidated building.
Or some sort of millennial apartment building, which seems to be the trend lately.
There's a few things I want to talk to you about. I definitely want to circle back, and I saw this on your website, to the haunted temple, because I love any type of haunted house or anything scary. And we actually had our own kind of haunted. We had a trick-or-treating at the Masonic Temple here last year for Masons and their families, where they brought their kids and they could go around the building and knock on different doors in our temple, and then there were Masons handing out candy to the families. So I think that is absolutely awesome. But before that, I want to touch on something that I think a lot of Masons forget, but I think you guys in Norfolk would recognize, is that so often these larger Masonic temples, they're not just Masonic homes, they're community homes. They're places where, at least in Windsor, you know, we've had the Masonic Temple here for 100 years, 100 years next year. You know, people will tell stories about getting married here and having dances here and meeting their wives or their husbands here. Just so many memories of our city is tied into the Windsor Masonic Temple. Is that the same in Norfolk? Is Norfolk Masonic Temple also a community center and a place where people have those fond memories?
We have weddings there. The community uses the building. We happen to be right next door to Granby High School, and Granby High School uses the building for SOLs and different things at different times. They use our parking lot. We're also, and I'll let Tully speak on this. We're in the process of getting together with another nonprofit organization. And Tully, if you'd like to speak about them.
Which one are you talking about? AIC or Prime Plus?
Prime Plus, AIC.
Because actually, we're working with a couple of different organizations. Right now, we have a Norfolk Senior Care Center operates a nonprofit called Prime Plus. And there is an organization that was put together to fund the Norfolk Senior Center. So we work with them extensively. We work with another organization called Arts Inclusive Corporation. And they are, I'm sorry, not Arts, All Inclusive. Is it Arts? Arts Inclusion Company.
There you go.
Thank you, sweetheart. But anyway, they work with people who suffer from Down syndrome and all kinds of other handicaps, special abilities, they call it. We utilize our auditorium and our theater for them. They put on performances every year. So we're involved in the community in numerous ways, not nearly as much as we'd like to be, but we're working to become more of a fixture. One of the big things about the Haunted Temple is we bring in probably about 5,000 people a year that would otherwise never come into the building. And we use that as an educational opportunity for them to share a little bit about what we do in the building and to show them that it's not a church and it's not a place that you, you know, can't come inside. And it's pretty good. I like it. It's fun.
That sounds very cool to me. If I ever get a chance to make it to Virginia in October, I would love to check that out, because I think that's such a cool thing. And it's something I want to, it's an example of, you know, a Masonic temple, thinking in a different way about what it can do and what it can be. You know, there's at least I think sometimes there can be such a amongst some older members of the craft, this idea of like a Masonic temple is just for Masons and then that's it. And the idea of trying different things and thinking in a different way and inviting the community in, and letting people have a good time and enjoy the amenities that you offer. How did the Masonic temple come about? Who thought of it? The Haunted Temple come about? How long has it been going on?
Well, I think you're probably talking to one of the founding fathers, Joe.
Yeah. The haunted house was actually we've been doing it, I guess, about 7 years, maybe 8 years.
This will be the 10th year.
10. Wow.
Yes. Ooh. You're old.
Yeah. So, oh, thanks. Years ago, I was always involved, always like the haunted houses. So I would set my yard up. If you you go through the neighborhood, you see this guy who's like really involved in haunted Halloween. His entire front yard is nothing but a giant Halloween thing. Well, that was me. I used to do it in the front yard. Then I did it at campgrounds, and then I did it, I built all the different props and stuff, and I just kept expanding to the point where I had no more room. And then I tried to get a couple of the lodges in our area, not in 35, because my sons were in DeMolay. So I tried to set one up for them as a fundraiser. But like Tully said, that was 10, 12 years ago. And you couldn't approach a lodge and say, hey, I'm going to set your building and your property up as a haunted house. You know, can we do it? They're like, like you said, some of the older generations, oh, you can't do that. Yes. That's just crazy. But anyway, it kind of grew. And then Granby Temple, one of our building superintendents, Gary Gouge, kind of took he liked it as well. So he kind of pushed forward. And so as soon as we realized that we could actually make this happen, we started to do it, started to have it every year. And it has grown every year. And this year, it has grown exponentially. We used to set it up and take it down, but because of some of the situations in the temple, it's now going to be a permanent setup. And I will tell you, some of the displays we got in some of the animatronics, I mean, it's as good as anything on the planet for that kind of stuff. And it's not something that you're going to start and expect to do all in 1 year. It takes time to build it up. I mean, unless you've got a whole lot of money, just go buy all this stuff. But we build it ourselves. We do buy some stuff if it's reasonably cost. We this year, because of the COVID, some of our people were unemployed. They were out of work, couldn't go to work. So we actually started 3 or 4 months ago to renovate. And, for people, if they're stuck at home, to go up there and start working and renovate all of the stuff. So we've actually completely remodeled our haunted house this year. And we have Todd Holwick, who's a dentist, who was out of work, couldn't be a dentist for a while because of the COVID.
He's not even a Mason.
And he's not even a Mason. He's what we call our haunt master. He goes to all the big conventions at the around the country, He's been involved in this kind of stuff for quite some time. He loves to do it, and he's certified. And what I mean by that is that he knows all the rules and regulations for the haunted places. You know, the pathway's got to be a certain width, the ramp's got to be a certain this. You can't use plywood that's not been fire treated. So the Haunted House Association, I guess, that's out, nationwide. He keeps us in line with that. Every year we have to have the fire marshal come through and inspect it. So it has to be certified that way as well. And we've not had any problems over the years with the fire marshal or the city codes and stuff. So there's a little bit to just setting up a haunted house.
One of the other things I wanted to touch on just real quick is our involvement of the Granby High School NJROTC kids.
We involve the community. The ROTC from Granby High School are the actors. And then we give them money every year for their organization. And even if the DMLA wanted to be involved, they could. But the DMLA chapter is kind of dwindling down a little bit here, so they don't have a whole lot of members. But any of the youth organizations for Masonry is welcome to. And they have, over the past, been involved in it. So we try to spread the fun out to everybody. And the money, if whatever money we make, we donate some of it to the different organizations.
So how, like I mentioned to you guys before, the reason I contacted the Norfolk Masonic Temple is through Christopher Douglas. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The Virginia Research Lodge, he suggested I contact you guys.
Last year we dug it out of way.
Yeah, we did. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No worries. He suggested I contact you because I've been getting a few Masons who watched the podcast, got in touch with me, asking if I had been doing any research or if I would do any research on how current circumstances, how government regulations dealing with coronavirus has affected Masonic temples and how Masonic temples are dealing with any losses of economics or just not being able to meet, even Masons not being able to meet. And Christopher Douglas thought you guys would be the Norfolk Masonic Temple would be a good temple to contact. So my question is, you know, how do you think Masonic temples and Masonry in general will manage to recover from COVID-19? I don't know if you guys are able to meet yet. We are not in Ontario. We haven't had a in-person lodge meeting since March, I believe, is the last time we had that. And no. Obviously, rental just everywhere are down. So how do you see Masonry and Masonic temples recovering?
We're back to business, but not business as usual. Our lodges are starting to meet. We're our Grandmaster Douglas Vernon Jones, Grandmaster of Virginia for 2020. I probably ought to mention his name because I work for him. But he's been, you know, very careful. And as everybody knows, most of the Masonry, at least in Virginia, is they're older, so they're more susceptible to having problems with the COVID. So we have been sensitive to that. The building right now, since we've opened, we have all of the masks, the hand sanitizers. We clean the rooms. The lodges clean their rooms, you know, good. They're restricted to just taking care of business. And taking care of business, you know, is a big part of the lodge, especially when it comes to, you know, any kind of voting or taking care of paying the bills and doing all the things that we have to do in lodge. The biggest hit that we've got right now, and I'm sure it's like this throughout the country, is we have a lot of candidates stacked up that we cannot do degree work on, which is just sad. I mean, that's what we do in the Blue Lodge. You know, we work to bring people through line and bring people into lodge. And right now I've just had a meeting with my masters to figure out how many people we've got in the pipeline. And we're over 40. You know, between our lodges, we've got 40 plus people that's got petitions and that have been, you know, are waiting to get something done, which is really the hardest thing to, you know, you don't want people to come to Mesa and then say, hey, by the way, we can't do nothing with you until, you know, September, October. That's really the hardest thing. I think overall masonry is going to be fine after this. The people, most of the people I talk to, we've had Zoom meetings with the masters and Zoom meetings for the lodges, and they just want to get back to normal, you know, get back to the lodge and get things going again.
And how do you think Masonic temples such as yourself, such as the Windsor Masonic Temple, that do rent out space for community events, for weddings, for dances, will recover? Especially, you know, my concern is not so much the current restrictions, it's the potential for people to be wary of large gatherings and large groupings and maybe hold off booking larger events for a significant period of time past when restrictions end. Is it about, you know, thinking outside the box and looking at different revenue streams like the Haunted Temple and the foundation you guys set up? What do you think is the way that Masonic temples look to recover or, you know, make up some of that lost revenue?
The weddings and the, we still have a lot on the books. We still have a lot of stuff scheduled. And the deposits have been paid. And the weddings and the retirement functions that the community uses our buildings for, the educational stuff that they use the building for, they're still there. It's just that they can't do stuff right now. So, and I think this is an opportunity myself. And I've discussed this with the board and everything else, that a lot of these venues who do this, in fact, we just had another big organization in our area close. They folded and they were for events. Their living came from events. And they folded because it's that's a business to them, and they have no other income, and they have those event the people, you know, doing these events and renting their buildings to big weddings and functions, they're struggling bad. So the way I see it, Granby Temple with these other groups going out of business is just going to be more customers for us. I mean, we have a great venue. We have a beautiful building, the people don't have a problem coming doing weddings and those types of events in our building. So, I mean, our sign still out front says, you know, need a place to rent. You know, we still keep the sign up to say, hey, you know, you got something coming up, give us a call, we'll put you on the calendar.
We're really fortunate to have a group of members who are invested in the building, because their forefathers and their lodges put the money together to build it. So they're going to continue paying their assessments as long as they can, and that'll keep our lights on. So
I like what you said there. I think it's worth expanding on the membership and the lodges being invested in the building. how important is it to Norfolk Masonic Temple to, or Norfolk Lodges to have that investment in the building, or just for Masonry in general, how important is it, you think, to maintain, you know, our Masonic temples? So often, like you, we mentioned earlier, you know, you see Masonic temples in disrepair or lodges move out of them. You know, investing in and maintaining these historical properties that are so important to Masonry and the community, how important is that, do you think, for the craft and for the community?
Well,
Joe, I'll let you answer.
All right. I think it's very important for the community and the craft. And I might look at this a little differently, but, you know, these buildings are in disarray. All of the lodges that are struggling, people, the Masons aren't looking at things the way I think that we should. And, you know, we live for today. The society today just lives for today. But we should be investing in the future. I mean, Masonry deserves it. Masonry is a great organization. But people don't seem to look at it as investing in the future. And I think that's why a lot of our buildings are in decline. You know, people are just looking just to hang on and just hang on and just worry about today. But Masonry, if we can get people to understand that, you know, this isn't just about us as Masons today, it's about Masonry tomorrow. And we really need to focus on preserving not only the history, but the buildings that we have for those for tomorrow. And I've been pushing this, and Cully and everybody at the board, you know, all the people in the temple. It's like, you know, this ain't about today, it's about tomorrow. And that's why for many, many years, in fact, just up until last year, I was on the committee on youth. I was the chairman for the committee on youth, pushing all the grandmasters for the past 6 or 7 years. Hey, this is about the future. We need to support the future. And I've made comments to people. Look, I'm 60 plus years old. I'm not the future. I'm the past. So what we need to do now is get the future to take care of the future. But unfortunately, I guess people are just so caught up in their day-to-day things that, you know, they're not looking to the future. They're not looking to leave something behind for the future. And I can get Tully to tell you that I get on that subject sometimes with the brothers in the lodge. And this isn't about us.
Yeah, there's a camp, I would say, of people who will insist emphatically that Masonry is not about a building. And I would agree with that to a certain extent, but I think the building is about Masonry, and you can't let it go. You can't forget about the history and the sacrifices of others. That's like saying the country is not about freedom, or you know, the United States is not about liberty. You know, it really is, right? You can't just continue to let things deteriorate and fall apart. At some point, you got to stand up for the things you believe in, you know? So, anyway.
I think that was very, very well put, and I agree with you both completely on that. It is about, you know, leaving something for the future, and the importance of these buildings to the craft and to the community, and maintaining them for future generations, and not, you know, cutting and running. No. If there's troubles. Do you think how much of the concerns with our Masonic buildings do you guys think relates to overall problems with the craft in general? Like, I'll use the Windsor Masonic Temple as an example. So it was built in 1921. So, spoiler alert, we're almost at our 100-year anniversary. And when the Windsor Masonic Temple was built, there was 100,000 Masons in Ontario. By the time it was finished, there's currently about 33,000. And in Windsor itself, there was, you know, there was less Masonic lodges, but more membership. Now we have a great number of lodges, but significantly less members. And, you know, in the States, Detroit, which is right across the river from Windsor, they built their Masonic temple in the 20s. And at that time, you know, one out of every 11 adult men in the States was a Mason. So as, so these buildings were built, at least Windsor, Detroit, Chicago, many others were built at a time when Masonry was really growing, you know, the golden age of Masonry. How challenging is it to maintain these buildings now that we're seeing a decline in membership? I don't know if it's the same in Virginia, if you're having the decline in membership in lodges, but do you think that that has to do with the difficulties related to maintaining buildings in places like Chicago, for example, losing their Masonic temple?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what you guys, you know, I don't know how your temple operates. I mean, does your temple get its money from its membership, and how much of their dues goes to your temple? And that's really what it kind of boils down to, I think, and that's what we tried to explain to our people and our, the people in our building. And I mean, there's a couple, I mean, the statement you just made has got so many different ways to go with the answer, but and financially is what makes the buildings operate. I mean, that keeps the building, the financials is what keep, you know, you keep the building going. But
sorry to interrupt. We're getting some feedback from, I think, Tully. Oh, I think we're good now. Go ahead.
So, I don't even know where to start with that with all that what you just said. But let me look at it from a financial standpoint first, because I know it firsthand. In our building, in Granby Temple, we have 1,300 individuals paying $80 a year to keep the temple. Right now, we catch flack from a lot of people, you know, from in our temple about, hey, we can't afford this building, and I'm sorry, and I will tell anybody, $80 a year is really crazy to be paying for that building for every member. And we can make it happen.
Crazy, like not a lot crazy. You got to be specific when you say that, because it could be interpreted the other way, right? It's crazy cheap.
Well, I mean,
I got it. Crazy cheap, yeah.
Yeah, where else are you going to get a facility that the electricity's paid for, the gas, the heat, the insurance, the minor maintenance? Where are you going to get that for $80 a year? I wish somebody would come to my house and tell me, Joe, listen, I'm going to take care of your house. You just give me $80 for everyone that lives in your house with you. I mean, holy smokes. But, I mean, that's the financial ends of keeping a building going. I think a lot of Masons, they're concerned about that. They're like, you know, we can't pay it, you know. Which will lead me down to the next thing. Masonry, what has Masonry done? And what's going on with Masonry that puts us in a position where We've got Masons complaining about paying $80 a year to stay in the building. We just had an entire lodge leave the building because they said $80 a year was too much. Now, there's a problem. And, I just can't rationalize that logic. They're going to go somewhere else and rent a space. But that brings me to Masonry. I don't understand, and I've done some research, and I probably ought to do more, but Masonry since 1959 has declined in the United States, has steadily declined since 1959. It was the highest amount of Masons in the United States. It was like 5 million. And since then, it has been just a steady working its way down, all the way down to where we are now. And I don't understand that, because if you and you and myself and a lot of the members and the past masters, I mean, we understand what masonry is about, and we understand the philosophy and the rituals, and we it's hard to understand why this decline happened. And I've often wondered, why did people come to masonry in the first place, back in the 40s and 50s? What was the draw? You know, why? Where did what all of a sudden made all the Masons go, hey, all these people want to be Masons? And I've got my own opinions. I mean, some people say, oh, well, it was a good old boy thing. You know, hey, you want to be a Mason, you know, hey, come on over here. You know, it's a good old boy thing. I'm the owner of a company, and if you're going to, you know, and that kind of a thing. And that's really not what masonry should be about. But, I mean, it's just hard to understand what happened and why all of a sudden it just died out. And I've asked some of the older people, well, hey, why'd you become a Mason? Well, I got, you know, on the owner of Tabot Manufacturing was a Mason. So I got out of the military and I went over there and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, I think some of the movers and shakers of the time were all Masons. So people wanted to follow them into something, but it'd be a good research to try to figure out what the difference mentality-wise from Masons back then and today. But
I think it's not just Masonry, Joe, though. It's every civic organization. It's all the churches. It's anything that doesn't provide instant gratification, and people don't see the what's in it for me right now. If they can't get it right now, it's not going to get their attention, and that's just the way society is. It has less to do with masonry and more to do with society, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. Not.
If masonry was the only organization that was declining in membership right now, I would say you're probably right. But if you look at like the Fraternal Order of the Eagles, if you look at the Moose Club, the Elk Club, churches, Ruritans, all the organizations that were founded by people in this country. And in this country I can speak to, they're all in decline because people are too worried about themselves anymore and not the bigger picture, not the global impact, not the community impact, not the neighborhood impact. You know, it's focused on me, I. So, and that decline is what makes managing and maintaining these buildings even harder, because it goes further than the financial impact of I have less members, so I have less assessment income. It goes to the fact that the members that you do have are less inclined to donate their time, energy, and efforts in the maintenance of the same building. So, I mean, it's not a completely bleak picture, and I don't want to paint that, because my plan is and my goal and my philosophy is that if we hold on long enough, that sooner or later things are going to turn around. And the building will still be there as a beacon, as a lighthouse for people to come back to. That's my hope. So
I am relatively new to masonry in some ways. I joined in 2007. So I'm 13 years in. I'm a past master of both my mother lodge and my affiliated lodge, and I'm currently the secretary of my affiliated lodge, and I've done the community work and things like that. So with my, I guess, relative experience, one thing I think, and I don't know how you guys feel with this, that could be a problem. One of the reasons why we're seeing this decline, especially recently, is masonry. You know, we're always taught, I don't know if, I'm assuming everybody has the same thing when they're brought in. You know, a lot of older Masons will tell younger guys, you know, put your family and your work first, and then masonry will come third, if at all, right? There doesn't seem to be a lot of integration between a Mason's family and a Mason's work and his time as a Mason. You see, everything seems to be separate. And I'm just not sure if it's possible in today's time it's different for my grandfather. My whole family are Masons, both my grandfathers, great-grandfathers, my father. You know, in my great-grandfather's and grandfather's times, Masonry, what my dad described Masonry as very quiet. You know, my grandfather had his black bag, he left the house, he came back, he didn't really talk about it. He just went and came back. They knew he was a Mason, but it wasn't really discussed. But I don't think in today's day and age, you can expect that lack of integration, which is why I think it's one thing that a Masonic temple like yours, like Windsor presents, is the opportunity to get families involved. You can have Halloween events, Christmas parties, dinners, you know, so that when the Mason, when the man's going out, the husband, the father is going out to his Masonic lodges, the whole family feels like they're a part of it. They know the Masonic temple, they know the brothers. It's integrated in his life. It's not just a thing he does on the side. Do you think that's something that could be worked on, is that integration between the different aspects of the Mason's life?
Well, that's what, it's interesting that you brought that up. We did last year we had a committee put together by the Grand Master last year to come up with, you know, some of the stuff that you're talking about. And what I call it is the Masonic family. And that's where you're going with this. A lot of Masons don't get their families involved. But in my situation and Tully's situation, he does the same thing. My wife is involved. She's up at the temple with me working on the haunted house stuff. My kids were involved because of the DeMolay stuff. And, you know, we need to get back to the Masonic family.
Gotta be.
Okay. You know, and have that. In fact, I thought I'd send you the results from the committee that the Grandmaster put together. It needs to be a family. It should be a family. And like you said, back in the day, no, that was grandpa's stuff. You know, that was quiet. You know, no, you know, there was, they never talked about this stuff. But we, in Virginia, there's a big push to try to get people to understand, yes, this is, we're our Masonic family. And we are one family. Even between lodges, and I bring this up in my talks to the lodges, it's, you know, it's not about your lodge or my lodge, it's about Mason. And I don't know and where you're from, that they've got these little cliques in lodges. And the
lodges to interrupt. We got some interference from, I think, Telly's phone.
But anyway, we are working on that in Virginia in a big way to get people to understand it's a Masonic family.
I very much like that term, Masonic family. And if you have a Masonic family, then you need a Masonic home, and it would be our Masonic temples.
Yes.
Go
ahead.
You there? One of the other things that I think is pretty poignant about what you brought up is the fact that if you are talking about it with your family and at work, and it becomes a normal topic of conversation, it's likely that somebody else is going to get interested in it. I can tell you that where I work for the federal government, and very few people in my circle of influence or whatever ever talk about Masonry. You don't hear the word Masonry. You know, oh, you're a Mason? What's that mean? You know, it just doesn't come up. But I think if more people were talking about it, if more people were involved, then maybe they would ask the question to find out more about it, you know?
Yeah, go ahead.
Cameron, in your area, and this is one of the, Tully brought it up. In your area, can you ask someone to be a Mason?
That's one of those tricky questions, right? Yeah. So they, and I talked about this actually with Chris Douglas. There is, you know, improper solicitation and proper solicitation, right? Okay. So for some guys have the idea that it's not to be broached at all, the topic of masonry with anybody, because that would constitute improper solicitation. But, you know, our district deputy grand master and a lot of Masons have really pushed this idea of recognizing that there's a difference between improper solicitation, which is, you know, applying undue pressure or forcing or harassing somebody to join, and proper solicitation, which is, you know, bringing up that you're a Mason, discussing what you do, discussing the benefits of Masonry to yourself. So you wouldn't be allowed to go up to somebody and say, you know, please join Masonry or you should join Masonry, but you're certainly encouraged to discuss what the craft has meant to you and provide people with information about how to contact the lodge should they be interested. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. That's basically, that's what Virginia has. You know, Virginia used to be a bunch of bumper stickers that said to be one, ask one. And it has Square and Compass. And a lot of the older generation, they would not, even if they knew you. I knew a guy for 20 years that was a Freemason, and he's a good guy, and I never knew he was, never really paid no attention, but he never talked to me about it. And that was the older generation's philosophy. Hey, you know, I'm not going to tell you about it. You got to figure this out on your own. Where today, I think most people now talk about it a little more openly. And I did make it a point in some of my speeches to the lodges that, you know, there is nothing in our methodical digest that prevents you from asking someone to be a Mason. It was just a tradition that they had. So I'll talk to anybody about Masonry. I mean, I don't have any problems. I mean, I'm not going to ask a force them to be one. Hey, you know, when someone asks me about, hey, what, you know, what's this? I'll tell them everything they want to know.
And I think it's important to remember when you discuss the tradition of not discussing it, you know, that's a tradition that really dates to a time when in the 20s, one in every 11 adult men were Masons. So you didn't really have to discuss it. I mean, it was in the atmosphere.
Right.
So many professionals were Masons, tradespeople were Masons. There were so many rings out there. You would find out about it one way or the other, without necessarily having to have somebody approach you. Now that our membership is dropping, as you said, in Virginia, dropping steadily since the 50s, 59, people might not be coming into contact with Masons or Masonry as often as they would before. I remember even, you know, I've done some historical research for our 100-year anniversary. We used to, our local paper used to announce the results of Masonic elections every year. They would, just in the paper, who's the new worshipful master, who's the senior warden, who's the junior. So you don't need to approach people if your election results are in the newspaper,
right?
If that makes sense.
Yeah, they used to publish. I remember that. I've not been a Mason that long, but they used to put out when the meetings were. You know, it's on, you know, in the newspaper, there'd be an article, Corinthian Lodge is meeting at 7 and dinner before and that kind of thing. You don't see that anymore, nowhere.
So when you have the newspaper publishing your stated meetings and your officers, you maybe don't need to be as proactive in discussing Masonry as you do now, when those type of things just aren't happening to the same extent or the same level. And it probably happened back in the day because so many men were Masons, at least a couple in the newspaper are going to be Masons, you know?
Right.
So it's going to be on top of mind. What are some of your Antelli's fondest memories from your time in Masonry, particularly from your time at your Masonic Temple?
The dinners and the functions.
I would go with Grand Master's visits.
Yeah, that's a great time. We have a really great time with the Grand Master's visits. The haunted house is a lot of fun every year for a lot of us. We have a blast at it. I mean, it's really the functions, and most all of these functions that in fact I just mentioned are open to the public.
One example, Carolyn, is when we do the Grandmaster's official visit to the 35th Masonic District. Usually, there's 300 people or so that meet in our dining hall, and the wives decorate the room and put tablecloths on, and it makes it a really distinctive event. Everybody's dressed up, and their food is served by the Demolay and the Job's daughters, and we've got a lodge or two in the kitchen. We have a big commercial kitchen. We've got a lodge or two in the kitchen that are, preparing the meals, and they start off early in the morning, and the day before the decorations start, and it's all this energy and effort that goes into this big production, and then we get 300 people in the room, and we say the Pledge of Allegiance together, and, you know, there's a prayer, and there's fellowship, and it's just, that's one of the most enjoyable times also. We have events there, we had an Oklahoma Native Indian tribe come out and do the Master Mason's degree in our auditorium. That was remarkable. There's so many big events that are remarkable. But then again, there's the small events that are remarkable, like the day that I got to initiate my son. You know, that was remarkable. And that has nothing to do with the fact that the building is big, but it's my Masonic home. So it happened there, and I got to do it. I don't know. There's so many memories that come out of that building. There's the birthday party that we had for the guy that turned 100 that was in our lodge, past master, past district deputy, Bernie, Levinson. We had that, you know, just like anything that you want to do, we can do that. I think I had my 45th birthday party there, my son's graduation party, our niece's baby shower. Like, there's so many things that happen there that, for me, that could be happening for everybody. I just wish that people would get the message.
Well, speaking of getting that message, I will be sharing this with all of my Masonic contacts, some of whom are in Virginia. So if you guys want to do a quick plug, if somebody wanted to contact your Masonic Temple for an event, Masonic or otherwise, where would they go? What's the phone numbers and stuff? I'll also include all of that in the description to this video.
The best thing to do is go to the website, the Masonic Temple, and there's all the that's really the best way to get hold of us. We do have someone in the office, but she's part-time, so call in the office. You'd be leaving a message. Go online. Look us up. That's the way to get hold of us.
The website is NorthernMasonicTemple.com.
Oh, there you go.
And there's a contact us form on the back of it somewhere that you can send an email to 4 or 5 of us in leadership that can get back to anybody who inquires.
Now, I will... I will find a way. I don't know when they're going to open up the border again, but I will find a way to, if not this year, the next year, make it down to see you guys for your haunted temple, because I think that sounds amazing. Oh, and I would love to get to see it and take some ideas and bring them back here, because we did our trick-or-treating at the Masonic Temple. But there's always, you know, you can always do better, and it sounds like you guys have got an amazing haunted temple to check out.
It's a blast. You ought to come down. Where are you at, Ontario?
Windsor, Ontario. Stone's throw from Detroit. So
yeah, that's a good
right
drive.
Across the river.
That's a good drive.
it's, yeah, I don't know, 10 hours maybe?
Yeah.
Detroit to Virginia?
Yeah.
The border's closed anyways. Like, I mean, I'm told you can still fly to America, but you can't cross at the land border. And then when you fly down there, when you fly back, you're quarantined for 14 days. So, yes. Which might be worth it for a very cool haunted temple, but.
Oh, you gotta come. We, it's a blast. We have a blast.
So thank you guys so much for taking the time out of your, well, in the case of Telly, for taking the time from your vacation to speak with me. There's a lot of parallels in what we've discussed and what you've been saying between the challenges and the opportunities being faced by your Masonic Temple to the Windsor Masonic Temple and to so many other Masonic temples that I've been talking to. But I think the big takeaway I have from this, and I think you're absolutely right, is that, you know, these temples, these are homes for our Masonic families, not just our brothers, but our communities and our wives and our children and our friends. You know, they're our home. They're part of they should be part of our lives within Masonry and without. And it sounds like you guys have got an amazing Masonic home down in Norfolk, and I'd love to check it out one day.
Come visit us. We'd be glad to have you. If you need a place to stay, let me know.
Thank you so much. I will, for sure, if you don't mind that Canadian crashing with you.
That's all right. My father's Canadian.
Well, he sounds like a great man.
He's from Northern Maine. He speaks the Canadian French.
Thanks for your time, Cameron. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Cameron. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.